I'm Ryan Dombrowski.
I'm the Ninja Fat Man from Doom Ninja Podcast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper. We're called the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor, Stargate Pioneer. Everybody calls me SP. Whether it's good or bad, they call me SP. And your reporters for this special episode of the Starling Tribune, covering season 2, episode 4 of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, is Michelle.
If I'm not back for any reason, feel free to shoot him.
I love shooting people. That's awesome. It's just the two of us this week, but that's okay. We can handle it. We'll talk a little bit about what else we're handling together later on in the show. This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, March 9th, 2017, live on Geeks.live. Hey, one of the great things about the Starling Tribune here over on Earth 2 is that in addition to being famous newspaper personalities, we all claim to be Earth 1 comic book enthusiasts. Right, Michelle?
Exactly. I'm going to be honest. I'm moving. I have a great local comic book shop, and there's article after article about how people don't go in and pick up their books. Well, I actually contacted mine. I'm like, hey, guys, can you hold my books for a bit because I'm moving? And they're like, sure. Thank you for letting us know. So that's all you got to do. You just got to let them know. Give them a call.
Exactly. You know, I went in today a day late to pick up my books, and a day late's no big deal, but I usually am there on Wednesday. I couldn't be there on Wednesday this week, so I went in today and I said, hey guys, thanks a lot for holding them for me. And they're like, dude, no problem, we would hold them for you for a long time because I spend a lot there, right? Well, the last couple of weeks, it's been well under $50 that I've spent at the comic book store. It's been more like $30, which is odd to have like 2 or 3 weeks in a row like that, because normally with all the titles that I actually read, it's not to say you need to go in and spend that much money. It's just what I like to do because I read a lot of these comics. But just beware, in a couple of weeks, it's going to ramp right back up. And there's going to be a lot of titles coming out every week from the major houses and from the independents, I guess they're called. What are they called, Michelle? Like IDW and Image and those guys? What would you title them as?
Well, Image loves to call themselves creator owned, but I call them independents as well. Smaller publisher, something like that.
That's right. But in any event, we're both comic enthusiasts. We both read a lot of comics. I might not have the history, but Michelle definitely does. And we're going to intertwine that knowledge into talking about Legends of Tomorrow, which, talking about Legends of Tomorrow, that's what we're going to be discussing tonight, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that, let's face it, could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, and Michelle's favorite of the bunch, Constantine. And just a little reminder that our discussions and speculations will probably include a lot of the information that the showrunners and actors themselves have shared. And even if we're throwing out wild speculations, as we do from time to time, we could probably kick over a truth here or there. So consider yourself warned, you might be spoiled.
And speaking of spoilers, we sometimes geek out and talk about this week's DC Comics. So every once in a while, there could be a comic book spoiler, but we promise we'll try our best not to ruin anything for you. If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Thanks, Michelle. I think it's time to go ahead and break this episode down for our listener.
Exactly. This episode is Abominations. This is the second season, episode 4 for Legends of Tomorrow. It originally aired November 3rd, 2016. That was a Thursday night. Directed by Michael Olowitz. Also directed Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, 11 Vampire Diaries. The last episode is tomorrow, Friday. I'm going to be crying. Also directed One Flash and 3 of the originals.
All right.
Writer, Mark Guggenheim, man himself, executive producer, Arrow, Legends, Vixen, has written 12 Arrow, written 8 Legends.
And is also currently a Marvel comic writer as well.
Yes. And Ray Utarnichit, written 6 Legends, A Flash, 4 Tomorrow People, and 2 Person of Interest.
I will say I'm a bit shocked that this was written by Mark Guggenheim, because on the face of it, Mark only really comes in on the big, huge episodes, like the episodes that really mean a lot. And I just didn't get that from this episode. So, Michelle, do you think he just wanted to write something about vampires, or not vampires, but zombies?
Well, I remember when this first came out, and I read a piece where he wanted to do a time travel episode. And if we're going to go to the Civil War, I'm going to make sure that we deal with slavery. So I think the parts that have to deal with like slavery and things like that, I think those are Mark's fingerprints.
Okay. Well, I think it was pretty well done. We'll talk about it a little bit more coming up. Now, we're going to talk about ratings. Now, this was back when Legends of Tomorrow was on Thursday nights. Michelle already mentioned that, but I want to hit it again. This was when Legends of Tomorrow was Thursday nights. It is currently where I believe on episode 12 or 13, in between 12 and 13 right now, I think. It is on Tuesday nights following Flash until it runs out of episodes, and then it will open up that time slot. But it has moved from Thursday to Tuesday following Flash. At this time in this week, which was, I believe, the 3rd of November, it was 1.75 million viewers, which isn't bad for a CW show. It's not great, but it's not bad per se, especially for Legends of Tomorrow, which has really struggled in the ratings, which is shocking because I consider it one of the better shows in the DC TV universe right now. Now, in comparison to the other shows that were on, Supergirl on Monday, the 31st of October, brought in 2.22 million. On Tuesday, Flash brought in 2.77, which has been consistently the DC TV's or CW Network's highest rated program of the week. And then Wednesday, Arrow brought in one of their lower rated episodes, 1.61. They've really struggled this season. So all in all, coming in third place is actually not that bad of a ratings bonanza on this week back in October and November. Now we're going to move on into the plot, and we're going to talk about the theme of the episode. And we always start with the title of the episode, Abomination. So Michelle, what do you think Abominations means?
Well, this is one of the few episodes where the word really isn't mentioned and such. So when I think of abominations, I think there's first off the obvious zombies in the Civil War era. But, you know, you could also say that slavery is the true. I think maybe Jack said that slavery is the true either horror or abomination or something like that. So that's probably, you know, more so than the zombies.
Probably. I did get that. They treaded kind of lightly. It wasn't hit you over the head. Very, very, very serious. But it wasn't light either. I mean, this is real stuff that happened, and it's kind of difficult to tackle that sort of societal issue when we've moved past it as much as we have. Not to say we still don't have issues, but at least we're not putting a whole race of people in slavery in this country that we live in. But it does bring up the fact that even today, like Jax, he said, I've been a black man my whole life. I've dealt with this my whole life. But I don't think even him really understood what was going on. And that was a major thread in the episode. And I actually rewatched that last scene between Stein and Jax about 5 times because I didn't want to miss anything of that scene. And Martin just hammers it home to Jack, saying, you know, this is kind of your story as well, not necessarily slavery, but the hope that is arising from the people that are at the end of the Civil War. This is kind of the end of slavery in the United States officially. And Martin was saying your story is kind of akin to that right now with hope and moving forward with your life. So it was nicely done, at least what I thought. But Michelle, did you have a differing opinion?
Actually, no. This is interesting that we're doing this week, and it's post Mark Guggenheim's gun episode for Arrow, which we've talked about, because that episode really didn't have any nuance, really didn't have anything to really do with the plot. But then you come to this one, on the surface, it's very silly, you know, zombies in Civil War, but they didn't shy away from it. And it actually was part of the story, and it actually advanced Stein and Jax's relationship. And it showed Amaya that you got to be careful with what you do. So she was, you know, Jax is still trying to teach her. Of course, they kind of veered from that at the end. But I thought this was actually a well done episode.
It was a bit with Maya and her reactions. I was kind of scratching my head over that a little bit. And it was because she grew up in a different era. She grew up in like the 30s and the 40s. They met at the beginning, pretty much, or the middle of World War II, Jax and Maya. So she's closer to the Civil War than Jax definitely is. And I was just kind of wondering why she didn't get it at the start. But I guess if you think in terms of today, we've had Roots. You and I growing up, we had Roots. It was probably one of our first interactions to slavery. I mean, big, huge, this is what it was like sort of thing. And we've had a lot since then that's documented what slavery was really all about. And maybe Maya was just in an isolation cube and really just didn't get the exposure to slavery that Jax did.
What do you mean by that? Because at the beginning, Amaya wants to stop the beating and Jax stops her because it being time travel.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I guess they flopped during the episode where she was hard over on, we can't screw around with the timeline. And Jax is like, yeah, we're going to. So maybe that threw me off a little bit, but it was still well done. I liked the fact that they torched the plantation house at the end, and just, it was the plantation owner. I forget who's the name of the plantation owner. I forget.
It's Collins. We'll get to that.
Okay, we'll get to that. We're going to talk zombies, and it's unfortunate that Chris isn't here because he used to be a regular co-host on Walking Dead podcast on the Gunna Geek Network, and they talked all about zombies there. So there you go. So let's talk about fights. We always talk about the fights of the episode because it's CW Network and they do a great job at choreographing the fights or using CGI. And it's just always fun with Legends of Tomorrow. And in this particular case, we got zombies. I did notice their very first fight went out in the field, right? And they find the zombies for the first time. Like Jax takes care, or Firestorm takes care of the Confederate soldiers that are going after the courier. And then they reanimate and everybody's like, whoa, what's going on? And they quickly pick up their fighting. I did notice that they went with the caveat that to kill a zombie, you have to get them in the head, basically, but they couldn't show it graphically. So it was interesting how they went about that. Like Sarah was stabbing them through the chin with her knife and Mick with the big rock, and blood did splatter, but you didn't see anything. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. They couldn't be all Negan and show all like the Walking Dead style, but oh my gosh, it was so funny to see. Here is Professor Stein, someone who's like, look at my intellect. I am such a distinguished individual, frightened of zombies. Like, he's like, I have an irrational. When he saw Zod, he ran away.
He did. And it's kind of funny. So I have purported on this podcast, I'm actually a rocket scientist. I have rocket scientist degrees. I've got an advanced degree in rocket science. So I hate getting on helicopters. I know the Bernoulli principle that keeps them in the air. I understand the physics and the aerodynamics. I still think they're going to fall out of the sky when somebody does a math problem and figures out, whoops, this isn't true. And they all start falling down. That's just irrational on my part. I understand that. But Stein saying, don't say the word, don't say it. And of course they say the word. You know, when they're in the ship and they're talking about it and Stein says, don't say the word. But then college boy historian goes ahead and says the word. I'm surprised they didn't pan over to Stein and him catching his chest a little bit and go, ooh, or something like that. That would have been fun, but they didn't do it every single time the word zombie was used. It is funny how he's just irrational, like, okay. And then he's talking to himself at the end, right? When Ray is knocked out and he's got to go grab the fire extinguisher to go after Mick, he's just talking to us. I'm like, okay, sound isn't going to bring forward zombies at all, is it? I mean, you'd think a little bit of, I need to be quiet, gets ingrained in his brain, but okay.
He had to talk himself into actually picking up the fire extinguisher and doing what he needed to do because, you know, during that first fight, Rory gets bit and Ray's first attempt fails and then you get zombified Mick. Oh, because I loved it because Stein's like, you know, he's horrible and frightening to deal with when he's not a zombie.
I know. Mick, you know, in retrospect, we've seen episode 12 of Legends of Tomorrow at this point in time. So we're 8 weeks in the future here. Now to go back and see this, you know, possibly Mick's experience as a zombie does something to his brain that manifests itself for the next 8 episodes. Did you ever think about that? Did you connect that at all?
That's interesting.
It's a possibility the TX-90 might have given him some advanced powers of his brain that nobody really understands, not even him.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness.
So we'll have to keep an eye on Mick for any further brain manifestations. In the next 8 episodes, he does have a few. So if you're watching along with this podcast, go ahead and fast forward to the next one that we do and just keep your eyes on Mick and his brain power for the rest of this season. It is something to watch. We've talked about it before on the podcast independently in the news section, but just stay with it. It's going to be fun to ride. Okay, moving on in the fights, you have Sarah with General Ulysses S. Grant. I get the feeling that Mark Guggenheim wanted to do Civil War reenactment sort of battle, and he didn't have enough money or extras or whatever to pull it off in Vancouver because, like, it's not Civil War. They're not shooting on location, right? So they have so many zombies coming at them that they're running out of bullets. And this is not like Walking the Walking Dead where you have automatic bullets. You have breech-loading rifles. And you can load maybe, I remember Glory, Matthew Broderick said, a well-trained Union soldier can get off 3 well-aimed shots a minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because Grant's like, you know, we have to have enough bullets to fight the actual Confederacy. And he's like, you know, we're running low. We can't keep this up all night. We're going to run out. And Sarah comes up with this great plan. I love that moment where they're in the tent. It's Grant, it's Nate, and there's Sarah in the background and she's just throwing knives. And she's like, what? It helps me think. And then she looks over and she sees the nitroglycerin and dynamite. And she's like, I got an idea. And get it out there. And Nate does the whole flare Olympic torch maneuver. And
you think he would have metallized himself a little bit before that because he could have gotten bit before then. But okay, so yeah, he does the flare. Hey guys, follow me, and gets on the dynamite and then blows everybody up, himself included. Which, by the way, after the fact, he was supposed to be covered in zombie guts. Well, here's the thing. He's on top of an explosion, right? He's not going to go anywhere because he's all metal. Might get a little deformed, but, you know, he still is a living being. So maybe there's some give and take there, right? His clothes, however, are all in one piece. How did his clothes survive an explosion from being right on top of the explosion.
Oh, SP, we have podcasted about Legends of Tomorrow numerous times. And there's one thing that we have all agreed, that there's this line that when you start to think about it too much, there's this little needle. And then when you cross over into thinking about Nate and the clothes, and it's like, I don't know.
Yes. So it's a show about time travel with zombies in the Civil War. And that is the line I'm drawing. That is, I'm like, come on, cut a couple of holes in there, burn some of his clothes with a lighter or something. But yeah, just having zombie guts over it, which you can just throw in the washing machine later and you can reuse the costume later. Burn a set of clothes. It's fine. You have the budget to do that.
Well, it's just clothes Gideon made to begin with. I mean,
good old Gideon. She should have fought the zombies a little bit more. Why didn't she? Did Mick cut her off?
They were on the ship.
I know. Gideon's on the ship.
Here's the thing. They already... See, at the beginning, you had Firestorm, and then Henry Scott, who's the dispatch, was like, what was that? And they're all like, what? We didn't see anything. They have to minimize exposure. I know this show sometimes just says F that, but their first and foremost thing is we can't interfere that much. It's not like the TARDIS that can camouflage into something small. It's just the Wave Rider, and it's either on stealth mode or everybody sees it. There's no in between. So that's what I'm thinking.
So as long as we're talking about this, at the end, Stein's talking to Jax, and they're in the little office in the back of the, I don't know, front area of the ship, whatever you want to call it. And then the ship takes off. There's nobody flying the ship. It's got to be Gideon. So Gideon's ready.
Sarah's flying the ship.
She was up front. I didn't see her up front. Not in the CGI. Remember, I watched the end 5 times. I did not see Sarah in the front.
Well, they probably laid in the course, and every once in a while, Gideon could go on autopilot. So Sarah probably put in the thing. That's where they're going. And Gideon's like, okay. And Sarah's off getting a drink.
It's not an episode of Legends of Tomorrow if somebody is not using the one directional control stick in the command chair. You need the front back stick. Come on, let's go. Boom. I didn't get it. So
I know. I'm sorry.
I know. Okay. So the last fight is at the plantation. We kind of talked about it already, but there was one scene in particular where Jax and whoever, it was another slave that he was freeing, they were next to Colin as he was getting killed, and he deserved it. And they're like, okay, we got to go. So they go up the stairs, and then you saw the zombie come in the doorway really quick. And the zombie just had a smile on his face, like, like scaring you, but it had a smile on his face. So he was having fun with what he was doing. Definitely not the Walking Dead school of zombies going on here.
No, this is 8 p.m. on CW, so they can only do so much. They can't do like the rotting flesh on The Walking Dead or anything like that. These are kind of like Halloween zombies. The makeup was fine, and they got like good actors with like the type of good faces to do it. And yeah, the slave owner gets eaten. And then Jax goes upstairs and throws a lantern or a lamp down or something. So
yeah, it was a gas lamp.
So it burns. Yeah. Burn.
Burn. Yeah, they just watch it burn too, which I do believe mimics a Walking Dead scene. It was the golf course, I believe. It was a few seasons ago. It was right before I stopped watching anyway. They just like to stand there and watch it burn. Although in this particular case, it was the symbolism of watching slave owners burn. So got that. And I was wondering, do you think that was CGI, or do you think that was like a miniature that they torched and then blew up in the background? Because those flames look pretty substantial there.
I don't know.
Regardless, there was a lot of fire. Fire, fire, fire. This is great. And there's big explosion with the TNT. Oh, yeah. SP Pyro is having fun this episode.
I bet.
So let's talk about this TX-90. It's some sort of bioweapon that some space pirates got a hold of.
Yeah, they were on a job at the beginning. The guy's like, I got the TX-90 like we were contracted, but somebody dropped it or something on the ship, and oh my God, what they did. And the dude got away and then but crash land, and there's a temporal beacon, and our legends intercept the signal, and they're like, hey, there's a time pirate somewhere. We better go find it in case ruins time. Just happens to be in 1863 Mississippi.
Yeah, middle of the Civil War, turning point of the Civil War. As a matter of fact, they claim that this battle was the turning point of the Civil War. Not so sure about that, but that's what they claimed.
I actually looked this up because, you know, there was Ulysses S. Grant, general of the Union Army. They talked about the Battle of Champion Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And May 16, 1863, the Battle of Champion Hill was the largest, bloodiest, and most significant action of Grant's Vicksburg campaign. 32,000 advancing Union soldiers met 23,000 Confederates in a fierce struggle for a vital crossroads roughly halfway between Vicksburg and Jackson, Mississippi. And I got that from CivilWar.org.
Okay.
Yeah, quite the battle to pick.
Definitely wasn't Gettysburg, but still was pretty big. That's a lot of soldiers. It's just shy. It's 55,000 soldiers together, which was big back in the 1860s. Wow.
And Nate claims to be Colonel Sanders, again, with the modern use of everything. But he says he's from the 31st Pennsylvania Infantry. That was a real regiment. So he wasn't making that part up. He was being the chicken guy in a real regiment.
And this is something that the show kind of confused me, is that Grant said that Colonel Sanders' captain was Sarah, and Colonel Sanders said his captain was Sarah. That rank structure just doesn't, even if it was a naval captain, it would be equals. I don't know.
Well, he's saying that a colonel is telling him that she's his captain. I think it means that she's just not somebody who throws knives, that, you know, because Nate was being awful at the beginning, like, well, I'm Mr. Historian, and oh, by the way, this is 1863, and women just didn't talk, so you little lady gotta let me do the talking, because I'm the historian, and I know. And then they get to Grant, and he's all like, oh, hey, you know, I'm a big fan, and yeah, I'm a Colonel Sanders. And Grant's like, why aren't you in uniform? Who are you? You're a spy. And then Sarah steps up and saves their butts.
Now, after the first couple of episodes, Nate the Historian just keeps on missing time after time after time again. And we'll talk about it when it happens for the rest of the season. He did have that wonderful moment as they crashed into Japan for the samurai episode. And he called it, it looks like this year, and I'm in, I forget what era he called it, but he was right back then. And in order to do all the research to find the legends to begin with, he was right all along there. But after that, his historical knowledge is kind of suspect. Maybe it's a matter of fact of the time stream changing and then what he knows.
He got the time right. He just fanboyed out when he saw Grant, history nerd, going, oh my God, you're Grant. You're taller in person. And it's like, what? It's like, just Sarah just steps up, knows what to do.
She does indeed. And so you got Rain Palmer, who is struggling. I forgot. Well, I didn't forget about this, but he's struggling without his suit. This is the first episode of the Atom without the Atom suit. And he's trying to figure out his place on the team. And he's trying to figure out how to be himself. Now, this is not the first time that this has happened. This happened over on Arrow when he had Palmer Tech. And then he didn't, and he was dead, and he was wondering, what did his life really mean? He's kind of in that situation again, and it kind of felt at the time, I remember, like they were rehashing an old tread, but they're trying to take him on a journey, and I just think they kind of stumbled in the first couple of steps in it, which would include this episode.
Yeah, I mean, he gets benched right away. Sarah's just like, why don't you be on the ship? And then, although he packs everybody's lunch when they go, it's like, oh my gosh, Ray, they're not going to school. And then he does a running commentary. It's 60 degrees and it's sunny. And Sarah's just like, click, off with the comms.
Yeah, like the one button that does everything, really. Like, you just press it and it magically knows to mute. How does that affect everybody else? I mean, does it turn hers off or does it turn everything off? What is it? It's like the Star Trek communicator. They tap that thing or they don't tap that thing and it works every time. What is going on with this stuff?
It's future technology,
I guess. I mean, I have enough trouble with my Amazon Echo. I can't imagine an actual advanced communicator.
She touches it later and is like, guys, can you help? And then they're like, no, we have our zombie Mick problem that we need to deal with. So I guess maybe it's like the on off. I don't know. I don't have things like that in my ear.
I was just thinking of the Babelfish, you know, over in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, every time you actually press it, it goes in your ear a little bit more. You.
Oh, my goodness.
But Mick pulls out a big one and he gives the cold gun to Ray at the end.
Yeah, because Ray goes in and he gives him a hamburger without Sprouts this time. And I love this scene because Rory's like, what's up? And Ray's just like, nothing. Oh, now wait a minute. And Mick's just like, oh, what did I ask? And, you know, talking about how, where do I fit? What do I do? And Mick's just like, you're an outsider. And it gets him to think about Snart. And he comes and he actually pulls out the gun. It's Snart's actual cold gun. And he's just like, you know, I've been looking for a partner. And he gives Ray the gun, which, wow, that's big.
Then Ray geeks over because it's like tech. It's like, oh, you're giving me tech present. Yeah, for a tech-oriented guy, tech present is like the biggest thing ever. And it's just a cool thing, especially since he doesn't have the Atom suit. Of course, I know immediately what's going through his mind is, I want to make this better. I want to tinker with this. And I think Mick's going to prevent him from doing that. But we'll wait until the future episodes to see that. So that was a big thing that happened. We didn't see Rip in this episode. We didn't see any of the Legion of Doom. And no, other than Amaya, we didn't see any of the Justice Society of America. So it was kind of a one-off. Let's get the team together. Let's get the team functioning together. Move a couple of the personal storylines forward and then go do the social statement for slavery and then move on to the next episode. That's pretty much what I got from it. Michelle, did I miss anything?
Well, yeah. I mean, I like this episode. I guess in the overarching Legion of Doom thing and the Spear of Destiny, I guess that way. But I still recommend people watching it. It had some great character moments. We got to see Sarah and the new guy work together. And then, you know, still you got Ray and Stein working together. So you don't get your usual pairings. And then we get Jax and Amaya. Learn a little bit about Amaya with the Vixen. I know it's a little bit. So Jax doesn't actually know how to act like a slave, which is good, but not great because his cover gets blown right away and he gets, you know, locked up. And Amaya gets locked up on purpose because she's like, okay, thank you for bringing me to your friend. And then Jax is like, well, we got to free them too. And they're like, no, we don't want to go because we just told you all the bad things that happened to slaves who are caught again by these people. And then the woman is like, she recognizes Amaya's amulet because she's like, Zambeze. And the woman's, oh, you know, that's like, yes, my mother was born there and everything. We got to trust them. So because they trust them because of they saw Amaya's like necklace. So you learn that a little bit more. And it was good in advance that Jackson Stein, you know, relationship still. I like how they're just not perfectly buddy buddy now. I still like how they still got to like work on it, especially since they have that secret that they're keeping from the team. Barry's future message.
That's right. We're fine here. How are you? Like, what? Yeah. Why did you not call me Miss Lance? And then she just gets too busy to really talk about it. But yeah, I'm kind of surprised Sarah isn't more suspicious of it. I think she is, but at the same time, she's got a lot of responsibility. So she's like, well, I'll just deal with that later because it doesn't seem to be a big issue. But yeah, there is that whole thing. And we hear a little bit more. This was, I believe, the first time that we heard a lot about the actual message in Barry's future voice, right?
Yes. A war is coming.
Has that been mitigated? Or I guess we'll get there in the end. But I'm not so certain that this message has been taken care of. And we're at episode 12 right now as we're talking about this. So. Yeah, you're right. There is that whole thing going on. And you're right. They're not buddy-buddy, but they do deeply sense each other.
Yeah, they have that psychic connection and stuff. And that was, you know, Stein was like, I have never felt this from Jax before, this fear, this anger, and how he was overwhelmed. So I thought this was a good episode, considering it was zombie Confederate soldiers during the Civil War, and it actually showed slavery. It could have gone wrong on so many different in so many different ways, but I don't think it did.
Yeah, I do remember it, watching it in passing. You know, by the time I got around to it, I was trying to ramp up for the next week. So I did enjoy watching it again. It was enjoyable. I just didn't think it had too much to deal with the main storylines. But
true.
That's just how it was. All right. So Michelle, we're not going to talk about Legends of Tomorrow next week, right?
No, we're not.
We'll have to wait a few more weeks for that. But what are we talking about next week?
We are talking about Arrow. The episode is Checkmate. It's season 5, episode 16. It will air March 15th. Oliver seeks the truth. Oliver gets closer to the truth about Prometheus. Meanwhile, Helix refuses to continue helping Felicity until she does a favor for them. Directed by Ken Shane, writers Beth Schwartz and Sarah Tarka.
Looking forward to that one. And this is the point in the episode where we're going into the news. So here we go. Fresh from the newsroom at the Sterling Tribune, we have our reporter, Michelle, really taking it in this week with a bunch of stuff, and she's going to start off talking about spoilers.
Yeah. EW does like the spoiler room and stuff like that, and it's always about like different shows. There is a little nugget about Arrow. Question was, if Chase is Prometheus, then who is under that vigilante mask, which is like the new mystery? Apparently, Mark Guggenheim knows the answer. We might not learn that in season 5. We might not learn who Vigilante is this season.
Trying to for the big cliffhanger there. Well, that's a way to rope in your audience, Mark. Jeez. No, you won't find out till next year. Well, I'll just start watching next year. Hey, come on. The ratings are low anyway. Why would you do this?
Yeah. They're already ramping up for the next crossover. They've talked about that, which that's going to happen early in the fall. But we know Arrow's been renewed, but don't know for how long, because Legends is on a shorter season. So the CW is willing to not give their superhero shows full seasons. So if CW says Arrow's only going to get 18 instead of 23, I would not be surprised.
Well, for the larger cast on Legends of Tomorrow, with the CGI that has to happen with that show every episode, I could see them not having been able to afford the full season of 22 episodes or whatever it is with that particular show. But that said, they have found creative ways to do things as well. But this is interesting with Vigilante. There's so many different ways that can go. And we talk about it every week when there's an Arrow episode. I mean, it could be Talia, it could be Tommy, it could be a lot of people. And everywhere you go, it's very interesting. And it would be interesting to learn the backstory of why the Vigilante got to the point of where the Vigilante is right now. And the whole thing with Adrian Chase, I don't know. We'll have to talk about that next Arrow episode, because I don't know how I'm feeling about it yet in the reveal, but we're going to find out more about that next week. In the meantime, something else that we haven't seen anything of for months now is Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, Dolph Lundgren is returning to Arrow. Again, he plays Konstantin Kovar. And Lundgren has said he's going to be doing 3 more episodes of Arrow, and that he's actually having a lot of fun being Kovar. And in fact, in the March 22nd episode, Dolph Lundgren is, that's when he's going to return. The episode is called Capuchon.
Yeah, you're asking me to pronounce something?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's Capuchon. But that's going to be March 22nd, so we're going to get Dolph back and looking good.
Yep, I know a lot of people are looking for, I think if they would emphasize Dolph a little bit more, specifically in the flashbacks, when ratings might have gone up a little bit, but I don't know, we'll see. We'll see as we go into April and May how this all pans out. And our last big news story of the week is, I saw it. Did you see it? Did you see Supergirl on Monday?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Of course, what we're talking about here is Terry Hatcher. Take it away, Michelle.
Okay, so if you're watching Supergirl and it's like since Mon-El, he told that story about how the whole Dax imprint, he was a guard for him and put him in. We were all like, yeah, Mon-El, we think you're the prince. And it's true at the end, Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo are going to be revealed to be his parents. And then we have a lot of news about the crossover that's going to happen starting March 20th. It's going to start in Supergirl. That episode, it'll serve as the opening chapter. A new villain comes to National City. He's going to put Supergirl in a coma. It's the Music Meister. And what's going to happen is that then they're going to go to the Flash. And, well, the Music Meister follows, and they're going to put Flash also in that coma, and it's going to be like this 1940s dream world, and it's going to be music and dancing, and it looks to be like a lot of fun. So again, the crossover starts in Supergirl, but the bulk of it, again, is going to happen on the Flash on the 21st of March.
And afterwards, stay tuned to the Gonna Geek Network as the new podcast Gonna Gleek is assembled and put together by Gonna Geek owner and senior producer Stephen John Drew. Stay tuned for that one. So thank you very much, reporter Michelle. You did an excellent job bringing in the news this week. Now, we are part of the Gonna Geek Network, obviously, you know, with Stephen pulling in Gonna Gleek, and there's all sorts of great things happening, including something that Michelle and I have talked about before, but we're going to talk about a little bit more detail right now. It is the Indiana Comic Con on April 14th, 15th, and 16th. And Michelle, what do we got going on for our fans at that time?
Well, we applied to do a panel. And in our application, we're like, yeah, sure. You know, we're open to either Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever. Well, they were like, hey, guess what? You get to do a panel on Friday. You get to do a panel on Saturday, and you get to do a panel on Sunday. Oh, amazing. Our panels, we're going to cover basically the same topic of working together on a podcast. How do you find a co-host, whether you're starting a podcast or perhaps you have someone unfortunately had to leave and then you want to find somebody new? How does that happen? What are good tips to do that? And some general podcasting tips as well. So it's going to be fun.
It is definitely going to be fun. I'm going to be there. Michelle's going to be there. And anybody else is welcome to come along. It is Friday from 2 to 4 in room 131 on April 14th. On Saturday, it's 11:30 to 12:30. And Sunday, it's 11 to 12. We will be covering slightly different topics of prepared subject matter, but we are going to take your questions if you have any at those three times. So come on, join us in room 131 at Indiana Comic Con 2017 from April 14th through 16th.
In Indianapolis, Indiana.
Indianapolis, Indiana. That's right. Crossroads of America. So thank you very much, everybody that has joined us tonight at Geeks.live. We really appreciate that. There have been a few people watching and chatting in the chat room. So thank you very much for showing up. And thank you very much if you're listening to this later that you have downloaded the podcast. And go ahead and give us a thumbs up on your pod player of choice. We really appreciate that. And if you want to drop on by and join our live chat as we record, it will be 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific at www.geeks.live.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on geeks.live. The next live show on the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate all those 5-star reviews on iTunes. Like us on Facebook and YouTube and badger us on Twitter. You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageeknetwork.com. We can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, that was a great episode, SP.
Glad to do it with you.
This wraps us up for another week. Any last words? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Zombie Mick.
And I'm Michelle Ely, at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag Sarah's Knives.
Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.